Chapter 12. Stand Your Ground. Meanwhile, Robert is sat in a round white room on a big white sofa with Jacob. The floor is made of glass, and through it he can see fluffy white clouds moving gently under his feet.
"Shall we have a look and see what's going on down there?" Jacob says.
Robert nods, although he's not really sure he does want to know. He's quite comfortable where he is.
"Okay, if we must."
He gestures for Robert to look down. As he does so, the clouds part, and he's able to see into his hospital room. Joan and Sarah are by his bedside. Joan is holding his hand, when suddenly Leo appears at the door, having flown in on the red-eye from New York. He's clearly tired and irritable. He looks at Robert lying on the bed, wired up to all kinds of monitors. He looks in despair and turns to his ex-wife.
"Jesus Christ, Joan, this is worse than I thought. Who's in charge around here? I need to speak to him."
"Leo, it's okay. The doctors have assured us they're doing everything they can. We're waiting for some test results to see if they can operate. He's still alive. That is the main thing."
"Still alive? Look at him. He's barely there. And why is he here? Is this hospital definitely the best place? Has he got the best doctors? He needs the best, Joan. He's my son. I demand the very best."
Joan tries to answer him, but he cuts her off.
But this is the best."
"Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm going to take care of it. I need to make sure he's in the right place. In the best hands. I mean, Joan, do you even know who his doctor is? Have you even bothered to find out his credentials? Our son could be dying and you're just standing there doing nothing."
"I'm sorry, Leo. I understand you're upset. But they've assured me they're doing everything they can."
"Everything? Then where are they? Why has he been left alone like this? Left to you, our son could die. Christ, Joan, you need to get a grip. If he dies, it'll be all your fault."
Joan visibly shrinks into herself and drops her head onto her chest.
"I want answers and I want them now," he yells. "Where the hell is his doctor? I want to speak to him right now. Someone needs to ask the right questions here. And that is my job. I ask the questions. You know that's what I do. So I'm taking charge from here on in. You two are just a waste of space."
He glares at Sarah. She also hangs her head in shame and embarrassment, turning her head away, though, so he can't see that she's upset.
"But Leo, they are doing their best under very difficult circumstances. You must believe I've done everything I can."
Jo tries to reason with him, but her voice is getting quieter and quieter.
"Well, clearly it's not enough. I've had to come all this way, had to drop everything, some very high-level cases, because I can't trust you to do things properly. You never have."
"But Dad," Sarah says, "that's just not fair. Mum's done all she can. She's been right by his side since it happened."
"Oh, and still there's no progress or proper answers. Two of you are damned useless. Absolutely hopeless. Christ almighty, you'd think together you'd manage to get him some decent help. Why do I always have to sort the mess out that this family makes?"
Joan starts to cry. Sarah goes and puts her arm around her in support. She glares at her father, but he dismisses her. And before she can say anything else, he shouts again.
"I demand to speak to the man in charge. Who is in charge here?"
Dr. Preeti Johar, the senior consultant, enters the room, having heard his outburst way down the corridor. She's in her mid-40s, a diminutive woman dressed in a navy blue suit, a white blouse, and flat pumps that emphasise her tiny frame. She carries a clipboard in her hands and wears a stethoscope around her neck. She looks much younger than she is. He launches himself at her.
"And who the hell are you? I demand to speak to whoever's in charge here. Why hasn't my son been moved to a private hospital? He needs the best, not some random run-down NHS shambles of a place."
"Sir, this is a private wing, and your son is receiving the best care possible. My name is Dr. Preeti Johar," she says calmly. She puts out her hand for him to shake, but he ignores her, preferring instead to stand too close to her with his arms folded tightly across his chest. He glares down at her, but her face remains impassive. I am the consultant in charge of his care. I can assure you that my team and I are doing everything in our power to keep your son alive. I assume you are his father. Leo nods, staring at her in disbelief. In which case, you are welcome, Mr. Bernstein. I'm sorry about your son and his predicament, but I need to request that you remain calm. Your wife and daughter have been here since your son arrived and have been exemplary. Perhaps you could take a leaf out of their books. He glares at her in disgust, but she continues on, calm and collectively. Your son needs total support. It's essential we keep this environment focused and calm, and all conversations here need to be constructive. Leo huffs and looks incredulously at her, in a voice that is calm and patronising with a hint of menace all the same. He says, "Let me tell you about speaking constructively. I am one of the best litigators in the world. My job is to talk, and when I talk, I make things happen. I win. I always win, and I will not be told what to do by you or anyone. Have I made myself quite clear?" Dr. Johar holds his gaze, her expression totally neutral. She doesn't respond, merely raises her eyebrows at him, inviting him to continue. Joan and Sarah glance at one another secretly, impressed and admiring Dr. Johar, but not daring to let it show.
"You had better listen to me," Leo continues, but just a touch louder than is necessary. "I want to speak to the senior consultant of this hospital, not you, whoever is at the top."
"Sir, I am the senior consultant at this hospital. I'm also in charge of the trauma unit and all interventions." She doesn't take her eyes from him, and she's not in the least intimidated.
"Well, then you had better make damn sure my son survives, or I'm going to sue the arse off you," he smiles sardonically.
Dr. Johar looks at him stonily. She takes a breath and speaks slowly, enunciating every word almost in monotone.
"Sir, I do understand that you are traumatised and not being entirely rational, but I have to tell you that if you proceed in this manner, I will have no choice but to call security and have you removed. It's very unadvisable for you to make threats or be abusive in any way to a member of the NHS. I, personally, would rather concentrate on my job right now. So if you don't mind, I think it will be for the best if you leave. Now, I strongly advise you, as a doctor, to get some rest. You've had a long flight. You're clearly distressed. Come back tomorrow, when you are a little more composed and rested, and we can speak about your son's condition and treatment strategy then." Leo is furious. His face is red, his eyes bulging. Joan looks at him imploringly.
"Please, Leo."
He turns on his heel and storms out. Dr. Johar turns to Joan and Sarah.
"Wow, he's quite a character, isn't he? Is he always like that?"
"Pretty much," Sarah says, "especially when he doesn't get his own way."
"Well, this isn't about him. We have a life to save here."
They all nod in agreement. They can't quite believe he's been put in his place so elegantly and firmly. "And trust me, if he continues in the same aggressive manner, he'll be banned from the hospital. The NHS has very strict laws about bullying staff. I will not have him in here upsetting my team and jeopardising Robert's chances of recovery in any way. I will make allowances for his behaviour on this occasion, but I will not tolerate any more." Joan sighs. Sarah reaches over and shakes Dr. Johar's hand. "Thank you, Doctor. I'll speak to him and make sure he understands. I'm so sorry for the way he spoke to you. He's used to taking over, and I think it frustrates him that he can't do that here."
"No, he can't," says Dr. Johar affirmatively. "He certainly can't."
Robert is watching this scene play out and is shocked by what he witnesses. He looks at Jacob with his mouth open. He's silent for a while. He'd always been so proud of his father, but all he feels now is ashamed. He's about to say that he isn't normally like that, he doesn't behave in that manner, but then he realises that this is a lie, and this is exactly how his father is. He looks at Jacob, eyes wide.
Shit, who knew?
T-
Turns out my hero is a bully, whose footsteps I've been following in. I used to see him as being a strong, male, uncompromising man, but now he just looks like a bloody bully, picking on people who he thinks are weaker than him. That makes him pretty pathetic. God, I feel as though I've been misguided my whole life. The way he's been treating my mother, my sister, and in fact, probably pretty much all the women he's ever interacted with. It's just been totally unacceptable. Jacob shrugs and raises his eyebrows in question. He's only ever been thinking about his own needs, not the impact his behaviour's had on others. What a selfish, arrogant git. Guess this is a bit of a pivotal moment for you then, eh? Jacob says solemnly. Jacob, is he really that much of an arsehole all the time?
Prayed so. But actually, in fairness, I've seen a few that are worse. Not that many, but a few.
Trouble is, son, when you're not called out on bullshit power games, there's no taking account of what's happening. No looking at the destruction caused for yourselves and others. It's a big problem you guys on Earth have. We try to tell you about it, but you just don't listen. It's taken being in a coma for you to even start to get it. And some people never get it. They get to the end of their lives without learning the truth. Then they die, and they have to go right back again and work through it all over again. You see, the thing is, when you think you're right, because people are afraid of you, or you've got all the money and can buy people, you don't know what's real and what isn't anymore. And that's really not good for anyone. Ends up being all about sex, power, money and control. After a while, you lose track of reality, and that's what happened to your father. He's not such a bad guy deep down. It's just the bits on the surface that are a bit shitty at times.
Nah, actually, I think he really is just a shit.
My life is on the line and the only thing that mattered to him was being in charge and winning. Trying to blame things on my mother is unforgivable. I can see it now. She's the one that's always been there for me. I was so angry at her when he left because I thought it was all her fault. But now I wonder how she could have put up with him for as long as she did.
Indeed. But you always have to look at both sides of the story, Robert. Things are never just one-sided. They both had a lot to learn. And there's a good reason for them being together.
Really? Robert looks at Jacob, who just shrugs and nods.
Yep. But now isn't the time to go into that. We need to focus on what's happening to you down there for a bit.
Christ. Am I ever going to get back there? Looking at all of that, I'm not even sure if I want to.
Oh, you got a lot of work to do yet, Sonny. But the doors to perception are beginning to open for you. I think you're already seeing things differently. And that's what it's all about. Anyway, talking of seeing things differently, let's have a look at your sister, shall we?
The floor opens up again, and Robert focuses his attention on Sarah. Sarah leaves the room to get some coffees for her and Joan. In the canteen, she runs into Dr. Johar.
Have you got a moment, Doctor?
Oh, hi, Sarah. Yes, sure. How can I help?
First of all, thank you for everything you're doing for my brother. Even though we're sick with worry, it's such a relief to know you're taking care of him and that he's in your capable hands. We know he couldn't be with anyone better, especially after the way you handled my dad. Can I buy you a coffee? It's the least I can do after what happened.
Oh, you are so welcome and thank you. A coffee would be great.
Do I take it your parents are divorced?
Yes, for a long time. Dad walked out on her when Robert was 8 and I was 6. To be honest, things were much better when he left. I can't stand the way he speaks to her. And she never says anything back. He can be so intimidating.
Weren't you frightened of him?
No. I'm sure your father has his good points. But he's clearly used to getting his own way.
And that's not always good for people. If we never get challenged, we think we're always right and authority gets abused. Part of him is just a bit of a bully. But deep down, all bullies are actually frightened people. I grew up with bullies in my family. And then when I came to medical school, it was more of the same. Even now, I have to stand strong every day to hold my space. And being senior consultant in a hospital this size isn't easy. And no one expects to see a small Asian woman at the helm. To be honest, I quite like seeing people's reactions to me. Standing up to people with power isn't easy, but it's bloody rewarding when you do.
How do you do it?
I've never seen anyone stand up to him and put him in his place like you did. It was amazing. Oh, to be honest, when I was your age, I was very timid and very submissive. I wouldn't say boo to a goose. Wasn't in my nature or my culture for me to stand up for myself, especially where men are concerned. What you have to understand, Sarah, is that I come from a very male-dominated background too. The patriarchal system is so embedded, and most people do it on automatic pilot. It's not even conscious. It's not just men, by the way. Women do it too. And I had to learn how to be assertive in a healthy way. It wasn't something I grew up with. I began to study people and notice that they either got walked all over or got angry when they weren't seen or heard or given the attention they wanted. And then they'd lash out. I realised that neither approach was very healthy.
So what did you do?
Well, someone recommended a practitioner who specialised in assertiveness and what she called quiet power. I went to see her and she changed my life.
Wow, that sounds exactly what I need. Do you still have her details?
I do. Let me find them. She opens her phone and writes the number on the back of one of her business cards.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. I'll look her up.
Sarah puts the card safely in her purse.
While we're here, tell me a bit more about you. What is it you do?
Dr. Johar asks.
I'm a primary school teacher, year two.
And how do you find it?
I love it.
Well, I love being with the children. It's the educational system which is difficult, and it's becoming more and more difficult. I sometimes struggle as the school is a bit too academic at times, and all the admin stuff we have to do these days is a killer. Plus, we have constant on-the-spot inspections from Ofsted, so there's no time for them to relax. Children that age really need time to play, to explore and create. I was inspired by my mentor to do meditation sessions with them, morning and evening. And I also find they're a lot calmer when they've done something creative, so I often get them to sit and do mandala colouring. I got that idea when I was travelling.
Sounds amazing. I bet the children love you. Where did you go travelling?
Oh, South America, Central America, Southeast Asia and India. I fell in love with it all, especially South India. Kerala felt like my spiritual home.
Oh, that's where my family are from, Dr. Johar smiles. Whereabouts did you go?
Oh, all over. My favourite part was the houseboats on the backwaters. And the food. Oh my God, I never ate such delicious food. I ended up going practically vegan, partly because of it, and partly because I did an Ayurvedic training course while I was there. It helped me realise how everything we do affects our bodies, not just the food. It was a real revelation. I decided I didn't want to eat anything that had been killed. And it was tough, as I come from a house of dedicated carnivores. I still have no idea how to feed me on Christmas Day. So these days I bring my own food. I have the most amazing recipe for a spicy Brussels sprout pie.
Ah, so my family are from Kovalam. They have a restaurant on the beach. I grew up on the beach eating amazing food. Although we did eat fish, but it was caught fresh every day. And all of the fishermen and everyone involved in the process would pray to the spirits of the fish first. So it became a sacred offering. That way it felt okay to eat them.
Amazing. What a beautiful way to do it. So when did you come to the UK?
Well, my parents had been saving up forever so I could come to university here. I already had some family here, so I worked my butt off, got the best grades I could, and got a place in Barts and the London Medical School in Whitechapel. I had a job as a waitress in the evenings to pay my way and lived with my cousins. One of the things that saved me was a class we did at the start where we were taught how to use our minds. It was like a cross between meditation, mindfulness and hypnosis. Some of the students were quite disrespectful about it at first, mostly the boys. They thought it was woo-woo rubbish. However, the teacher was inspiring and really knew her stuff. She was totally assertive and really knew how to handle them. After a while, even the rowdiest and the most cynical of them started to see the benefits. I'm still surprised that the process isn't taught at national level. All kids who study should learn these skills.
Absolutely, Sarah says, nodding.
It sounds like you and I have a lot in common.
Definitely. People have no idea what a positive impact eating properly and meditation really has. My life changed when I discovered both. I came back from my trip a changed person. I gave up my job in the corporate world and trained to be a teacher. Unfortunately, it's getting harder and harder to cope with the way it's going, and there are so many teachers having breakdowns or going into the private sector where there's more freedom. and people get paid better. But the kids that really need help can't always afford to go private, and even then it's still tough. I really worry about some of mine, especially one lovely young boy. He's such an angel, but I can see all the signs of ADHD, and I'm really worried that his parents and the school are going to push him down the medication route and put him on Ritalin. She stops and looks embarrassed. Oh God, sorry. You're a medical person. I didn't mean to offend you. I just think that there might be a different way of dealing with this.
Oh Lord, don't think you need to apologise. You haven't offended me in the least.
I completely agree with you. There are many more solutions than medications. You have to have technology and meds in certain situations. But the rest of the time, which is most cases, it should be about prevention, not cure. I certainly believe there are things you can do to improve mental well-being and address the challenges of neurodiversity. Neurodiversity? Yes, it's an umbrella term for anyone with ADHD or on the spectrum. We haven't got enough proper studies yet, but food is critical, as is proper stimulation and physical activity. Lord knows, no one yet knows the real damage of all the technology children and adults are bombarded with nowadays.
I know, Sarah says.
I've been following some studies on the benefits of fish oil in diets. There is loads of evidence to show it makes a real difference.
Fascinating. It's not my area, but I'd love to see them.
I think mental health is one of the most pressing problems we have in this country today, and it starts in childhood. Although, in all honesty, it usually starts with the parents.
Yes, for sure, Sarah wholeheartedly agrees.
And I try to help there where I can. It's funny, but I also bring in crystals for the children to hold. They love them. I don't go into too much detail about them, just that they're part of the earth and come with lots of different shapes and colours. And I get away with it by saying it's part of their diversity training. It's incredible just what you have to do these days to get a bit of something different under the radar. Ofsted would probably have a fit if they knew I was using some of my hippie ways in the classroom.
Well, I haven't told many people this, Dr. Johar says, so it's totally confidential.
And she looks around to see if anyone's looking as she pulls out a piece of clear crystal quartz that she has in her pocket. But I carry this around and hold it when I have to make good, clear decisions, which is most of the time. I have no idea how it works, and I don't really care. I just know it works for me. So don't worry. My inner hippie is active too. They both smile conspiratorially. Maybe I should get you an even bigger bit, as we need to make some very clear decisions about my brother. Sarah sighs sadly. I'd do anything to get him back. Even though he was a bit of a shit to me and totally dismissed all the things I believed in. In fact, I stopped talking about most of the things that mattered to me around him because it was too painful. I was fed up of being ridiculed, and he had such a closed mind. So rigid. But that said, I still love him and I want him back. He really has been so influenced by Dad. But if he pulls through, maybe this will be the wake-up call he needed. Be honest with me, Doctor. Do you think he can pull through this? Dr. Johar is very quiet for a moment. She speaks very carefully.
I never give anyone false hope. And clinically speaking, his chances are probably about 30%. But I also know that all things are possible. And in my career, I have seen people pull through. So who knows? You and your mother need to stay positive and stay positive around him. It helps both you and him. Now, I'm not a Christian, I'm a Hindu, but I know that there have been studies around prayer and the effects it can have. So if I were you, I would make sure that I prayed every day. Speak to whoever you need to and thank them for bringing him back to you.
Thank you, I will. Mum and I have been kind of doing that anyway, but I'll do more. And maybe I'll grab a couple of crystals to put by him. Can't do any harm, can it?
Anything that's going to help generate calm and optimism is good. Anyway, thanks for the coffee. I have to head back on my rounds, but I'll catch you soon, Sarah. And if there is any news, I'll let you know.
Bye, Doctor, and thank you. I'm really glad we had this chat.
Robert has been watching all of this with Jacob. He remains very silent. Jacob notices a few tears welling up in his eyes.
Robert is hoping that Jacob hasn't noticed.
So, kid, what do you think of that?
Oh my God.
I've been such an asshole of a brother. I never thought about how I made her feel. I was too busy trying to be like my father and impress everyone with how clever I was
and how rational. Turns out, she's the smart one and I've been an idiot. I'd no idea what she was up to when she was travelling, and that she was doing such great work with the kids. Thought she was crazy when she gave up the corporate life. I thought she was just being lazy and a loser, who couldn't hack the stress. How wrong was I? She was doing it to have a better life and to make a difference. I had it all back to front. Guess I could have learnt a lot from her if I'd given her the time of day. Jacob remains silent and doesn't try to correct him in any way. Robert is humbled and ashamed. I wish I could go back in time and do it different, Robert says. You can't go backwards in this life because it's done. But if you do get back, you can turn over a new leaf and do it differently from then on. Robert nods. He just hopes he hasn't left it too late.